When Eric Cervini was working on his doctorate in LGBTQ history, he was surprised by how much had already been published in the field. But really, apart from professional historians, most people, it seemed, didn't really know this stuff. The research was largely in peer-reviewed journals and academic press books. So the obvious solution, he thought, was Instagram.
There was about a 9-month period between when I defended my dissertation and my book was published. And during that time, I said, you know what, let's try this out. Let me put up some videos. I got a green screen. I put it up, ironically, in my closet and said, let me film myself just telling some of these stories and having fun with it, you know, posting goofy pictures. I'm going to pretend like I'm in ancient Greece or in Mesopotamia or you know, ancient Egypt. And people liked it.
Cervini's book, The Deviance War, went on to be a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. But it was his homemade videos that inspired a real full-fledged history series on Discovery Plus. And that's just been launched, and it's called The Book of Queer. Eric Cervini spoke with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman.
So let's hear the elevator pitch for The Book of Queer. What is this show? How do you describe it? It's definitely not something you know, your average documentary on the History Channel.
Mm-hmm. I would describe it as a queer history variety show. And so what that means is, you know, we're telling approximately 15 stories from the past, ranging all the way back to ancient Egypt up until basically present day. And rather than taking the conventional docuseries approach, we do it through reenactments, comedians. They were all written by 12 queer comedians, and camp, humor, drag, and song. Every episode ends with a musical, an original choreographed musical number.
Open our book and dazzle your mind. History's about to be redefined. Think you know the truth about the past, honey? Better think again. We're shining a light on queer lives at last, dishing drama from now till then. These pages are full of many courageous stories of glory that are all right outrageous. Baby, we've always been here. Welcome to the Book of Queer.
Yeah, you have some great, like, queer celebrities on the show. Could you tell me about some of them and what they do on it?
Sure. I mean, there's so many. So every episode is narrated by a different high-profile member of the queer trans communities, and they're helped by 18 historians help actually narrate these stories along with Miss Vanjie and Gottmik and some of these incredible drag queens and comedians who also narrate it.
Anyway, communities crave identifiers, and the queer community is no different.
Darling, I'm the rainbow flag. Look at me. I'm the reason you can spot a gay bar from a mile away.
Today, the rainbow flag is the most recognizable queer symbol. But it was hardly the first. Back in the day.
Excuse me, can I speak for myself without you narrating everything?
Well, excuse me, Miss Rainbow Flag, but I am narrating.
Anyways, to understand how truly powerful I am at uniting different queer communities, we need to first visit a few of those earlier symbols and groups, or as I like to call them, my yes, the queers. Rewind that and do better.
Okay.
So I want to dig into some of the history and some of the people that you cover on the show. First of all, can you explain how the high five got invented?
I'll be honest, I learned so many new stories as part of the story. You know, the first thing we did was collect hundreds of these queer stories with a team of researchers. And I didn't know this one. And it's the story of Glenn Burke, an incredible baseball player who played for the Dodgers. And what people don't realize is that in the 1970s, the high five was not really a common form of communication. It just wasn't something that was really done yet. And at the World Series, Glenn Burke brought it to America. And it was the first time. No one really knows why he raised his hand in the air to congratulate Dusty Baker, but he did it. And this is a gay black man who did this. And, you know, we tell that story as kind of, all right, this is the inventor of the high five. But I think even more important is his entire life story of what happened to him next.
Right. So what did happen to him next?
If you're a relatively open gay black man playing in the MLB in 77-78, and you know the management of the team learns this, you can guess what happened, and it's not a pretty story. He was traded to the Oakland A's. You know, he was the soul of the Dodgers, and they kicked him out.
During a 1982 interview on the Today Show, Glenn spoke publicly about his queerness.
The people that you like and live with and work with might not understand, you know, the problem of being gay and a professional baseball player. It came to the point to where I was uncomfortable. I thought that the world should know how I felt. So when I got fed up with the situation, I thought I'd tell people about it.
It's a hard story, especially, you know, I'm sure you noticed that the MLB didn't participate in the telling the story. They would not allow us to use their footage. Hmm. We couldn't even license it. So that made it even more difficult to tell the story. But, you know, it was an honor not just to learn his story. Of course, he died. I don't want to call it a spoiler, but I mean, he dies, of course, of AIDS, you know, and so it would have been amazing to interview him about it. But fortunately, we had an incredible actor. We had the help of Glenn's family in pulling it off, I think.
One thing that's very interesting to me in thinking about these historical figures is the issue of using very modern terms like non-binary or gender non-conforming or gay or lesbian or bisexual or queer, any of those, to describe people who lived long, long, sometimes centuries, but even, you know, in some cases just decades before they were in popular use. How do people in your field think about that?
I mean, it's been a subject of debate for decades. Can you call someone gay when that word didn't exist? And so one of the very first things we do, and we do it in the very first story, which is Abraham Lincoln, is define the word queer, which just means deviating from that subject's society's norms surrounding gender and sexuality.
Howdy, I'm Eric Cervini, the Book of Queer's resident homo historian. Welcome to the footnotes. You may have noticed that we haven't labeled Abe gay, because that wouldn't make too much sense. Why? Because sexuality, just like race and gender, is what we call a social construct, or a concept that we as a society just came up with. And during Lincoln's time, the idea of a homosexual hadn't yet been conceived or constructed in the English language. That's why we love the word queer. All it means, in the words of queer theorist David Halperin, is whatever's at odds with the normal, the legitimate, the dominant.
So what do we know about Lincoln's sexuality?
Well, we know he had four children, so we have to start there. But we also know
Is in the pudding.
Exactly. We also know that he loved four men. And the proof is in the letters. The proof is in the memoirs written by his contemporaries and by these men themselves. And, you know, the historian who tells this story, Thomas Balcerski's wonderful scholar, he says it always goes back to the bed. When you look at whom was Lincoln sleeping with, it's men. He did not sleep with his wife. They preferred not to. But when his wife was out of town, who did he sleep with? Men. Time and time and time again. And we're very careful about saying, you know, we're not calling him gay. We're not saying even that he was bisexual. What we're saying is that he had four intimate relationships with other men that may have been sexual. And we let people decide for themselves. We call him queer because we do believe that this was beyond even the differences in masculinity back then. This was going beyond even that in terms of his intimacy with these men.
Hmm. So the people on the show, the historical figures, are both people that everybody knows, like, you know, Lincoln and Alexander the Great and Eleanor Roosevelt, but also people who may not be familiar to wide audiences. And I'm wondering, can you tell us about Harry Allen?
So Harry is one of my favorite characters. So Harry was essentially an outlaw, a trans outlaw. His story we identified from a wonderful book by Peter Boag. And he tells these stories of all these gender nonconforming and what we would now use the term trans folks in the West, on the frontier. This is in the late 19th, early 20th century. And Harry is one of those figures who goes out west. Of course, there are fewer laws, fewer regulations. It's easier to live on the margins because there's just fewer structures in place to regulate you. And that's true for not just sexually deviant folks, but also folks who transgress gender norms. And the record is incredible because what happens is he kind of becomes a celebrity in Washington, in Seattle, Portland, kind of traveling all around and just making trouble. He's very much a quintessential trans outlaw, and the newspapers report on it. And there's just this wealth of sources from the press, whether it's, you know, Seattle newspapers, local newspapers, that are just talking about, you know, they would use, quote unquote, this quote, woman who was presenting as a man and created this scandal that people just couldn't get enough of. Just getting arrested, biting cops' hands, causing fights. And he would essentially, anytime he would get arrested, he would say, look, I'm a guy. Like, that's what I am. And they would try to find ways of punishing him, but they never could quite figure it out.
Right. So when the show was announced, Breitbart wrote an article saying that the trailer makes, quote, wild claims about President Lincoln being queer and calls Joan of Arc non-binary. I'm wondering, what was your reaction to that?
I assume and I hope that is the first of many such articles that we get. Because, I mean, look, this, given what's happening in Florida, what has happened there, what is happening in my home state of Texas to trans kids there in Alabama, Arizona, everywhere. This show is a response to a very intentional nationwide attempt to erase not just our history, but our own existence.
If that's not queer, I don't know what is.
The tone of the show is so original. I mean, there's people might recognize elements of like Drunk History and the sort of sketch comedy format, but it's also it also includes a lot of academics, PhDs. It's a footnoted TV show, which I've never seen before. I you know, it's a show that's not told straight in more ways than one, and I was curious if you felt that there was a kind of style of queer storytelling that was important. Mm. Like, is there a reason that queer history shouldn't be told straight?
I think when you look at how the folks that were describing their stories, whether it's Jose Saria or, you know, even Harvey Milk or Gil Baker, they use humor themselves to tell the stories. You know, humor is a survival tactic. And so I think humor and queerness are inextricable.
Eric, thank you so much for talking with us. It's a real pleasure, and I look forward to people seeing The Book of Queer.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me.
That's Eric Cervini talking with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman. The Book of Queer is streaming now on Discovery+, with new episodes each week in June.